I think that what's, going on in the skies above us in terms of UFOs, UAPs, I do subscribe to the theory that Jung put forth, that I think Jacques Vallée would also agree with to some degree, and also obviously John Keel. Oh, well, actually, Alan Greenfield subscribes to this too. This idea that these are parts of the, are reflections of the archetypes that have existed, that are generated by humans, right? That the circular saucer-like nature of UFOs is indicative of the Great Circle, or this sort of mythical image of the circle. And that as we've progressed further into modernity, right? As we've gotten deeper into a world of technology, right? A world without magic, without archetypes, without myth, right? The world of empirical knowledge, our true essence, right? The, how we are the healthiest in our existence is when we are communicating or aware of these mythic sort of underlying aspects of our identities. And so we deny those things and we embrace modernity and we embrace technology. These archetypes, they cry out to be recognized. The pressure of modernity, the pressure of technology, the pressure of denying our mythic origins causes these things to violently or forcefully, they show themselves. And what we're seeing are these projections of these archetypes, these mythic archetypes that we've been denying. Now, I would go a step further to say that they're probably fae, and that the fae are somehow connected to these mythic realities. Think about the way that we interpret what we're seeing. At the time that they emerge and become part of the human consciousness and sort of the global zeitgeist, they mirror the technology of the times. You think of the, 1897 and the, the flap of all of the dirigibles, the airship, flap. And then, later on, we see, these saucers, but the aliens that we're seeing, they look like the aliens that would appear on Star Trek or Lost in Space, right? They're not grays. They're all kinds of weird spacemen and weird beings, and they're in overalls, and they look like they're in space, like space fabrics and all these things. But then as we get further and further on, into the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, we start to see these grays. We have cloning technology and movies like Alien and things like that. And so now we're seeing these strangely shaped flying devices or whatever they are, these UFOs, these UAPs, and they look like Tic Tacs. They look like pixels. And so, like, instead of a flying saucer, we're seeing digitized, unidentified flying objects. I just wonder, man. I mean, again, there seems to be a direct relationship between what we're seeing and how we see them and who we are at that time.
Do you think that being as they sort of act as a reflection of our collective subconscious prediction of technology that is coming, since they appear that way, that the reason that we have these Tic Tac shapes now is because of the blandness and lack of creativity in what we expect from electronic futures? Sleekness is the key operative in all of these designs. Look at smartphones. Like, if it's not rounded and sleek and chic and cool, surely that's what they're going to look. They're going to be even more chic in the future. You know what I mean? So they seem to always be a step ahead of the technology. So we're projecting what our expectation is going to be. Also, with the grays, it's like that lack of creativity that exists in the general collective subconscious. Like, we can't think up anything cool right now. So this is what they have to be. They have to all be the same. They have to be gray. They have to be sleek. I think it's like a, I don't know, like an aspect of like society now that has created this representation of the archetype? Do you think that's it?
All right. So first off, what you just said, right, is fantastic. And I like, as soon as you said it, I was like, oh man, think about it. Think about the Tic Tac and think about the fact that it does look like the shape of a fucking smartphone that's off, right? It's the object that all of us look at hundreds of times a day. The shape of the thing they're seeing flying around looks like just a flying black screen, right? Think about that. It is the most common object currently viewed every day. And that's now what UFOs are looking like. That's crazy, dude. But it's true. Like, have you been thinking about this?
Yeah.
Well, so, and what you were saying too, the lack of details, right? The lack of descriptive qualities. We can't even say that they're silver discs or they're whatever. It's just a black. It's almost it's this idea of that there's almost nothing there, right? That's not even, it's not reflecting any colors. It's not anything. It's just this like cell phone shaped void.
When did dark matter become popularized in pop culture and media? Was it around the same time we started seeing just voids flying through the sky?
Is it? I mean, I wonder.
I mean, it seems to just, off the top of my head, it seems to kind of line up. We start talking about, we're getting more involved in exploring space, you know, even if it's just from the terrestrial point of view. And now we're talking about all this antimatter and and all this stuff. And it's the absence of matter that's also a matter. And that, so that seems so futuristic, right? That seems so beyond our thinking process. Again, that is getting fed into the machine that's generating our interpretation of the archetype as a reflection of society. And it's indistinguishable. It's something that has, you know, seems to have zero creativity. It's all about function. It's beyond our grasp, but it's still a thing, even though it's nothing. That's kind of how I feel about the future. Like, it's nothing, but it's going to be there. Like, you know what I mean? So I think that maybe that's just me looking into it the way I look into it. I don't know. I kind of have a pessimistic point of view about the future growing up and the time that I've grown up. But I look to the future not with a lot of hope, especially in the last 5 years. You know what I mean? Like, there's very little for me to hedge any bets on that's positive. I can only expect more terrible things to continue to happen. And so I also feel that way, in that it's a reflection of that. And I'm not alone in thinking that. Like, a lot of people are very pessimistic. I mean, maybe combine what you said with the outlook of the majority of people, and that's what we've got.
Jason Andrews, this is Paranormal Patio. Welcome to Hair-Raising Horror Week.
When reality attempts to generate the image, and when we say archetype, really we're saying the aggregation of all human consciousness of what they think a thing is, right? And so, yeah, the archetype of the UFO would change because the system at large would be basically aggregating all these things that people are thinking of. And what we're thinking of now involves a great deal of voided reality, right? Of empty spaces and the mystery of those empty spaces, of the other being sort of that empty space, right? Yeah, man, I really think that's something that may be at work in terms of why the UFO, the perception of the UFO as an archetype, continually shifts. And I do think it's tied. You know, we're talking about all this, and I think a lot of people will be like, but dude, what about the fucking aliens, man? They're from another planet, you know? And it's like, maybe. Or it's something deeper. Because if it was just aliens from another planet, right? I just don't think the government would be having such a hard time wrapping its mind around what these things are. If they are some type of archetypally generated essences that tie into the Fae and human consciousness, you know, and like all this stuff that's super esoteric, right? Well, you can't fight that. And you can't explain it to Joe down the street, right? You can't tell him that you don't know how to shoot this archetype that keeps manifesting and communicating with you. You know, how do you go to war with your own ghost in a way? You know, I mean, it's fucking strange. But yeah, dude, that's so, I love that. I think
consider this as well, since we're having a conversation that I said I wasn't going to do. don't spit it out.
I'm sorry.
The emergence of the gray alien as the stereotypical pilot of the UFO, right? We'll just generalize. Before Roswell, I guess, whenever the shift really happened to flying saucer being the thing.
Kenneth Arnold.
Kenneth Arnold, sure. Okay, we relied on folklore to describe these interactions with these beings, with this archetype, if you want to put it that way. Then we get into the late 20th century, and media has consumed and taken over everything. Creativity for telling this story goes down dramatically, and everything becomes more and more uniform. And so the further in we get, when it becomes part of pop culture as well, look behind me, man, there's a fucking gray alien on my wall. Okay. So now that is what we think it is, because that's what we're being told it is in a way, you know, through society. But before, you had green guys from Venus, and you had orange guys from Hollow Earth, and you had all this other shit. That's because you had a million different people talking about a million different things all at the same time. And now we don't do that. Now it's all the same because it was on the X-Files.
Dude, I think that's you're like one, like hitting the nail on the head, right? I think those are the questions we need to be asking, right? What you're talking about right now, what we're discussing, this idea of like, yeah, look at the gray alien behind you, right? It's low fidelity, you know, and it's like the UFOs we're seeing now have low fidelity. And like you said, it's like there's no creativity. There's no one's able to see any detail in these things because we all think they're the same thing. And it's true. I thought, God, man, think about that, right? There isn't a variation in the belief of what aliens are anymore. They're just grays, men in black and grays, maybe some tall whites.
Occasionally something pops up that, you know, just like a little flavor nugget, you know, but like largely, you know, go ask anybody on the street what an alien looks like and they're going to describe this guy back here.
Do you think that's what it is? I mean, do you agree
that what I just said?
Yeah, that it is archetypally based, and that human consciousness is affecting how we perceive it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I believe in magic, man.
It is, but you know, like again, when we say magic, it's like it's this. All of this is the same thing, you know. It's
second order cybernetics. Hold on, I gotta take a shot. No.
It's all second-order cybernetics.
You're right, though. And this is second-order cybernetics playing out in the field that you can see. And you can probably measure fairly accurately by just going back and lining up timelines, man. Like, look where we are as a human race right now. We're in dire straits, and schools are cutting art programs and music programs and critical thinking. Our children are going to be in a worse spot, or those that go through public school system and public colleges are going to be in a worse spot creatively for the next set of decades. It could be another 50 years before we come around to realize we fucked up. Time to start firing up the old Bob Ross VHS tapes again. You know what I mean? So it'll change again. It'll be this, and then it'll change again until it becomes something that's just outside of what we think could exist. Something that's outside the collective creativity that we are constantly manifesting. But until we have big leaps, until we have another X-Files that captures everybody's imagination and changes that narrative, it's going to continue to be this. Until we have another Roswell, it's going to continue to be this. It will change. It's just a matter of time. The tic-tac will be what we're talking about, like the flying airships. You know, it's going to keep changing and keep changing and keep changing.
I think we see a lot of lights in the sky that are satellites, sadly, and like debris and things like that, as far as UFOs go. But I'm a big believer in, you know, other life. And I don't know if they come to us on a ship or if they come to us through different dimensions, through our minds. Like, I'm not really sure what they're up to, but I love the idea of other species piloting ships out there. So I'm going to grip that one tightly, because I also feel like I've seen them with my own eyes. And, you know, as many times as you want to like discredit your own eyes, because it's such a wild thing to feel like you've seen. I mean, I have. So it's like, I know that they're out there. I don't know how to explain like why they're out there. Especially if some of them can communicate with our minds, like you think, I don't know, would they be above ships? But, you know, maybe they're not. Maybe organic material can't be above something that's protective, you know?
Oh, well, quick and easy question. What do I think is going on above our heads in the sky in regards to UFOs, UAPs? Well, several things. I don't think there's one definitive answer. I think that there are physical craft that are 100% physical at the time they're seen that do seem to dematerialize, that they're real while they're there, and then they're gone in ways that they cannot just be a extra high-tech version of what we have now. There's something qualitatively different about UAPs from just, you know, really fancy drones or aircraft. I think that intelligences that are not human do control those. Do I feel that the beings that control them drive them around? No, I really don't. I feel that beings that advanced would not need to drive vehicles. I also think that there may be, this is not necessarily a popular view, but I guess maybe part of me just cannot let it go. I think some things may have crashed and been recovered, and that the government may, when I say the government, there is no monolithic government. There's thousands of different agencies keeping secrets from each other as well as from us. And do I think in some crate somewhere, in some lab somewhere, there could be a crashed, non-human created craft? Yeah, I do. I do. I think it's possible. I don't guarantee it, but I do think it's possible. So I'll take both of those rather than either or. I'll take both. There are craft that are part of the phenomena, and there are possibly actual crashed craft the government's covering up. That's my opinion for what it is.
I think that there are multiple things going on above our heads in the sky. I think that when we think of unidentified flying objects, I think some of it might be technology that the public is maybe not fully aware of yet. But I also think, too, that there could be weird stuff that we can't fully explain. I think there are visitors from other places, from other dimensions, from different galaxies. I think it's fully possible when you see a UFO and you've actually been called to look up to see the UFO, you're fully aware that this is some sort of phenomenon that is bigger than any government could piece together from whatever scraps were left behind at Roswell.
I couldn't tell you exactly what for sure is going on. I know there's something going on, and I know that there's a lot more to this world than what we can see. And for you not to believe that there's other life in another dimension or another planet outside of ours is, to me, is the scariest part of all. But there's definitely intelligent life out there. May not be here, but there's stuff going on in other places. I know there are people that believe that UFOs are little men from spaceships that float in the sky. And that could be very well true. I think there's more to it than that. I think there could be interdimensional beings. I think that maybe our little minds can't even comprehend what's going on. And so we are seeing things in a way that can make it a little easier for us to understand?
There's not one answer. It's not just one race of, you know, it's the grays or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, people say are driving these things. Or, you know, I think that the world, and when I say the world, I mean larger than the Earth, I think it's just such a massive place. It's way bigger than we even know. And I think that, you know, it's hard to know what motives there could be for anything to visit us. I think that things are visiting us. But why? I don't know. I'm not them. I'm just a human on this big floating rock, you know, in the vastness of everything, you know. But I don't think that there's one answer. And I think that even if you were to catch a craft and sit down with the beings inside of it, the other sightings still wouldn't make sense because they would be from a particular race, a particular species, a particular world where they had their own set of motives, which would be different than catching another craft and talking to those beings inside of it.
There's been quite a bit of revelation coming from congressional reports, so-called insiders. You've got Lou Elizondo, you've got Tom DeLong, you've got all these guys, and they're all saying, hey, I know here's the truth. This is what's going on. But then you've got, you know, the government agents who contradict them. As they said, they will contradict me. Is it all a big cover-up in the skies above us? I don't know. I don't know. And I don't think anybody does who's, you know, outside of probably the Pentagon. It could be, you know, aliens, visitors from Lanulos. It could be Chinese drones. It could be American drones. And we're just playing it up like, hey, we don't know what this technology is. So that way, when Russia and China sees our own disinformation campaign, they say, well, it's not ours. It must be aliens. Is yours? No. And then that's got us with a leg up on everyone for, you know, the military industrial complex, which is this goes into a whole tinfoil rabbit hole that I usually try not to delve down too much. My preference is thinking these are visitors from the cosmos. I prefer that thought rather than it's our own evolved human selves coming back in time to save us from our own eventual demise and things like that. That's scarier to me to think. But at the same time, I get it. I understand. It could be ultra terrestrials. Like they would go, are they from this dimension? Are they from another dimension popping through? It is such a mind warping reality to try to grasp that you definitely start to sound like the people who get the most coverage when talking about these things. And I had recently made a Facebook post about speaking with a UFO experiencer, and someone commented on it and said, how come the aliens only ever probe the hillbillies and the meth heads? And, you know, said something pejorative like that. And it's like, because, you know, who else is going to say something like this? If they brought Jeff Bezos down, Jeff Bezos was like, oh yeah, I definitely went up in a spaceship. I don't know. Honestly, I think he might sound just as crazy as Edgar, the guy over here at the convenience store who sits out front with a pack of camels all day. I can't say.
One of my favorite UFO or abduction stories is the case of Betty and Barney Hill. I remember being a very young child reading that, and I was so fascinated with UFOs at that point, that someone could be driving along a road, living their life, and then wake up, you know, hundreds of miles away, which to me sounds like very, like, delightful. If I didn't have to drive on a road trip, I could just be picked up and dropped off somewhere amongst the cows. But I have to say that's probably one of my favorite stories.
As far as my favorite UFO sighting goes, I'm going to have to go with Falcon Lake, you know, which I don't know if other people have answered today or not. You know, with Falcon Lake, I can't remember the guy's name. The gentleman was, you know, up at this weird lake area, and he saw this craft that he saw two of them initially, and one had landed. The other one did not. It took off, and he went to go kind of inspect it. When he did, it was just this metallic disc shape. When he did, he was kind of walking around it, and there was like a grate, and some like steam came out of it and actually burned him. And at that point he took off, and he was actually caught by a police officer driving down the street, who stopped him and, you know, said that the guy was out of sorts, but he acted fine, and he ended up going to the hospital. He had severe burns on his body and continued to have these mystery illnesses for the rest of his life. And everybody just kind of wrote it off until, you know, recent times. But it's a really interesting tale, that's for sure. A lot of people, even ufologists, have been skeptical of his story. But I don't know. I don't think you would fake illness for the rest of your life. But then again, who knows? I'm not that guy. I don't know.
All right. My favorite story, definitely recently. I mean, there's tons. I love, there's so many things, you know, you read and you're like, oh, this is fascinating, right? Homegrown Kentucky story. There's the Prospect, Kentucky aliens. They were encountered in Prospect, Kentucky, outside of Louisville. And this guy, like, I think, yeah, this is all from memory. I apologize, but some of this will be wrong probably. But the gist of the story, the encounter, is that he ends up leaving his girlfriend's apartment, or he goes to get food to bring back to his girlfriend's apartment. Anyway, he's gone far longer than he should be, right? And when he does get back, his eyes are completely bloodshot. Like, they're bleeding, you know. I think he has hypnotic regression, or anyway, the encounter that he has surfaces. And so the aliens he encountered, one was shaped like, was tiny. It was shaped like a small refrigerator with one arm. And I think that one was white. And then it was like, there was another one that was slightly bigger than that one, and it was shaped like a weird rectangle and had like a thing on the top of it. And then there was an even larger one, which was like a pyramid shaped one, and it was red. And so they were examining him, and the little white thing like touched its arm, the one arm that it had, to his head, and he had this excruciating pain. And so it's this encounter with these aliens that appear to be robots, but they're shaped in these like super strange sort of abstract shapes. And it's a terrifying encounter. I highly recommend looking up the Prospect alien encounter. Man, it's so weird because it's not Grays. And I think it happened in the 80s, I think. God, I'll have to look it up. But go check that out. It's totally nuts. And that's the thing for me. I love UFO and alien encounters and abduction descriptions that involve non-humanoids, right? That they're not anthropomorphic, right? Because it's easy to think that humans, if this is partly psychological, that the things they encounter would have a head, two arms, and two legs, right? It's the encountering of things that don't fit, that break the mold, right? That I find so interesting, that I think that we need to look a little bit closer at.
In my 20s, I hung out with a couple of people I don't really see anymore, like, you know, as a lot of humans do. And one of them was living with his parents at the time, and in their backyard, they had a crystal pit. And he would mine that thing all day and all night. And the dude had huge chunks of quartz all throughout his room, like super cool. And he was such an interesting character. We all called him Weird Al, and he was very like fear and loathing. Like, he'd have like yellow glasses on when you'd go see him, and he'd be like drinking wine and smoking cigarettes and talking about UFOs nonstop, surrounded by crystals. It was a very surreal experience. But he has so many UFO stories because I guess they hover above the crystal pit in his parents' backyard, like on the regular. And the last time I went over to his house, which sadly was years ago, but he and a friend were sitting there talking about this time that they were walking down the street in Falmouth, Maine, and walking to his house, and a UFO just started coming down the street. And it was like, at first it was hovering over them, and then it was going down the street, and then it like went slow and then it went fast and it just like ended up chasing them down the street. And I, whenever they were, when they were telling the story, I got this like vision of like Indiana Jones style, them like running down the street with like, instead of the big ball, this like UFO like chasing them from above, just in the middle of the woods, completely surrounded by pine trees. So that's one of my favorites.
Favorite UFO story is one that happened in Eagle River, Wisconsin, rural area not far from Milwaukee, where in 1961, a farmer was surprised by a glowing, classic flying saucer-looking UFO, which landed, and three people got out, which he said looked to be human, but he described them as Italian-looking. They cooked him pancakes, and unlike in so many of these stories, pancakes didn't disappear. People handled them. They were studied. Oh, then the UFO people got back in their saucer and flew away. Leave it. They wanted water. He gave them water. They gave him pancakes, and they left. The pancakes turned out to be very mundane flour and, you know, a cooked pancake. The interesting thing to me, one little side note, was that they contained no salt, which is something that is some people have linked to the Fae and their dislike of salt. So that's my favorite UFO story, because, I mean, come on. The UFO people show up and they give you pancakes, and we can really see the pancakes. It's tough to top that one. That's my favorite.
My personal favorite contact, attack, any of that extraterrestrial story is the story that occurred August 21st, 1955, nearby, about 2 hours away from where I'm from, in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And in the overnight hours in which Lucky Sutton and his family were assaulted by these tiny creatures that they purported to be aliens, kind of like little goblin creatures that had this metallic gray skin that they fired at with their rifles and shotguns, but they weren't stopping, and they would continue to attack them. And they barricaded themselves inside the house and shot up their shack, shot windows out, holes in the walls. And they were, you know, not a very well-to-do family. And the fact that they would destroy their entire house like that and waste ammunition in the name of attention is not, no, that is, that would not be the case. And the fact that after the fact they were so embarrassed by no one believing them, and the media terming, you know, coining the term little green men, that it just became a source of shame and ridicule for them. It was absolutely, I believe that they know what they saw. I 100% know it. I believe what they saw. I actually have a tattoo of the goblins on my arm from, based on the, you know, stories that they told and described. I actually have a diagram of that on my flesh. I actually believe that very much. But the story of the Hopkinsville goblins, the Kelly Little Green Men, that is my favorite extraterrestrial story.
I really enjoyed the Rendlesham Forest story because of the part where the witness, I guess he touched the craft, or he got very, very close to the craft and then, you know, returned home or whatever it was and fell asleep. But then I guess woke up and like had this download and just like was like almost automatic writing binary codes. Like that to me is amazing, to have this sort of like amazing alien contact of some kind where you receive information in binary code. It blows my mind because it shows that there's some sort of telekinesis or psychic download, but also in binary code. So there's this sort of like mathematical language that's almost like the transuniversal language that we can all use, or zeros and ones. So I really enjoyed that story a lot. I always enjoy anything that's connected to the Bermuda Triangle. I love stories that talk about unidentified flying objects going in and out of the water. That's, and maybe I'm partial to that because I enjoy the beach and I'm always like, maybe I'll see one today. I haven't yet, but someday.
I think my favorite contactee story, it's got to be Indrid Cold. And it's, I mean, I'm a little biased by it because I actively investigate that case. I speak with the Derenberger family. You know, I'm very close to it. But after all my time and sitting and speaking with Tanya and just getting to know her as a person, you know, I'm really hard pressed to believe that she would continue to carry her father's legacy and make up this story after, especially after she saw how it destroyed his life. And, you know, she talks about that openly. I mean, that man lost everything because he claimed to have a close relationship with a guy from outer space. And, you know, I don't think you just do that unless there's some very severe mental, you know, deficits going on there. You know, but all of his tests, he's gotten tests done for it. He was very, he wasn't a very smart man, but he wasn't crazy. And, you know, she's got the paperwork to prove that. And then Tanya herself now continues to carry on that relationship with this being. You know, a lot of people have asked me, well, schizophrenia runs in the family. Maybe it could be something like that. That's a great point, except Tanya Derenberger's adopted. So she doesn't really have that. She doesn't have the same genetics there. So why would she then go and put her reputation on the line to carry on the story, knowing what it did to her father, if it wasn't absolutely true? You know, I think that that's a really good one. You know, or I'll say this one real quick. You know, on the flip side of that, something a little more that's so ridiculous, it has to be true. The Vegetable Man of West Virginia. Hunter was out. He saw spacecraft land and he approached it. And this weird green man looking creature came out and sucked his blood through his fingertips. And that is just so fucking bizarre that it has to be real. Nobody makes that shit up. I mean, nobody does. So
I know this. This is probably like a hot take. I really actually enjoy listening to people talk about like the stuff that is really off the table. In other words, things where people are like, that's a hoax or that's a scam. But for some reason, I love the story. It doesn't necessarily mean that I fully believe it and I'm going to spend, you know, $1,000 on seminars. But I really find it fascinating when people talk about, you know, getting abducted and getting sent back in time and trained to be in, you know, armies, and then they get, you know, their memory wiped and they go back to their old body. Like, I think it's insane. Like, I'm willing to listen and hold space for the story, hold space for any story. In terms of other abduction stuff, I think you know this, like, I'm totally really weirded out about abduction stories. To this day, I really can't get through like TV shows like UFO Witness. Like, I love UFO Witness, but then like when they do the Betty and Barney Hill stuff, I'm like, nope, I have to turn it off because I actually start to get this really terrible feeling in my core. And I think it really is tied to the fact that as a child, I had such vivid dreams about aliens. So maybe there's something about this fantastical story making, you know, about like I went on an airship and went with the Pleiadians and saw, you know, a peaceful civilization. Maybe that's something that's a little bit more comforting to me than the idea of aliens coming and mutilating cows.
I think the reason that I'm actually very nervous when it comes to aliens, and they kind of scare me a little bit, because when I was a kid, I used to go deer hunting. And I remember one night my dad and I were driving and we saw a pair of lights come up on us behind our car very, very fast. And we were worried that they were going to hit us. And just as it was about to hit the back of our car, it lifted right up above and then shot over the car and up into the night in front of us. And that was one of my first conscious experiences with what you would call a UFO. And ever since then, I've had all these wild theories in my mind until I went to Skinwalker Ranch back in 2013, and that's when I for sure saw what you would consider one of the tall gray aliens next to the car at night. It was so tall I thought it was a tree until it bent down and looked into our vehicle. And when I saw the big black eyes in the night and I was completely awake, that is the first time that I thought, well, hey, that's There's something going on. Maybe these things do exist. And I'll never forget that.
Ooh. I'm not going to choose any of the famous ones. Because I don't have to. I have been abducted and contacted several times. I think the one that weirds me out the most could be my favorite, because I like weird things and I love body horror. It's my favorite genre of horror. There was a period of time where I and the man I was dating at the time and my son were all waking up with like iodine stains, and that went on for months and months. And then another like period of time between that and then this, I started waking up with like weird like metal pieces like protruding from my fingers, like the side of my fingers. And I know there's a name for that because I Googled it, and I found out the name and I like read all about it. And I'm not sure that it's not that. I don't know what was happening to me, but I would wake up with metal protruding from my left finger all the time. And I was telling somebody about it, and we were walking down the street, and as I was telling him about it, he looked down and he had the same thing on his finger. And then we went into a coffee shop and we came out of a coffee shop and he did not have it in his finger anymore. I saw it, I touched it, I was like, yes, that is the same thing that happens to me. And then he had it and then he didn't have it. And I haven't had the actual metal protruding out of my finger in a long time. It's a really strange material. Like, you can't tweeze it out. I've tried to tweeze it out. I've tried to clip it with like fingernail clippers. I've tried all kinds of ways to try to get it out of my skin. And it's like it like moves on you. Like, you can't get it out. But every now and then I will have a mark from where it was, but I don't always have a mark. Like right now I have no mark from where it was, but sometimes you can see where it was and that's all I have left, but I don't know what that is. It's really weird. And it's probably my favorite because I don't, because there's like no message, you know, there's like nothing like behind it. It's just a weird thing.
A lot of people have a great confusion about what the term interdimensional implies. Dimension isn't like you open a door and you enter a different room, right? So you go from the living room to the bedroom. It's not like that, you know? Dimensions are just your perception of the way that the world works around you. And it's kind of a mastery of those spatial confinements, which determine what type of dimensional creature we are. So we are third dimensional creatures, humans. We're third dimensional. We have mastered front to back, side to side, right? That's what we have mastered. When you start opening up the fourth dimension, the next mastery, the next dimension, the next perception is time. I do believe we have a really good handle on our own solar system and what's in it. And I believe that we are the only intelligent life form actively living on a planet in our solar system. I think we know that by now. But that would mean that whatever is visiting us, and I do believe things visit us, whatever it is visiting us is coming from very, very far away, farther than we can actually see and test and determine. In order for them to do that, the craft would not make sense to get in and drive as if you and I would get in and drive a car or take a walk down the street. They would have to master time. They would have to. And so they would have to have a way to bend time in order to get from one point to another, you know, as quickly as they would. Otherwise, you're talking generations upon generations, thousands of years of these generations living on ships in order to even get to us just to mutilate a cow. And I don't think they're wasting time doing that. So I believe that they have mastered time and they are getting here in a science that we can't comprehend, because we can't really comprehend time in that way. So therefore, they have to be some type of interdimensional is really not the right word. Ultra-terrestrial, I mean, John Keel kind of hit it on the head with that one, is really more like it, you know, because they're not really coming from another dimension. They have mastered another dimension is what it is. So I think that's what they are. I think they do experiment on us. For what purpose? I have no idea. Like I said before, I believe that there are many different species with many different motives. And I think that we're being visited by more than one.
For me, the pilots of a UFO, a classic UFO, that would be an extraterrestrial, which to me would mean someone or something of some sort of consciousness that is not from the planet Earth, originally or otherwise. And it's kind of a tough thing to wrap your head around with why would these ETs come here and experiment on us and probe us. And even if it's humans from the future coming back to save us from our inevitable fate, that leads me to a question of, well, why would they dissect this if they're just us? But I 1000% believe, as present day Homo sapiens, if we found any sort of uncontacted tribe of unevolved cavemen that were much like our predecessors, we would absolutely be dissecting them as well and taking them into study. That is human nature. So it kind of makes me wonder, well, why would we do that? But then it's, we're people. I understand why we would do that. But it also leads to the question of how are they accomplishing these feats of leaving fully exsanguinated bodies that remove all blood and the genitals and everything, and no trace of any disturbed grass to leave the corpse behind. It's baffling. Is that a dimensional travel? Is it aerospace travel? How does that happen? It's a thing that I'm almost afraid to know the answer of, because the stealth helicopters would be coming shortly if I ever said the right words out loud.
An extraterrestrial is any creature that we have identified as another. It's an other. It's an outsider. It's not fully explained. So sometimes when I think of extraterrestrial, I think of people that talk about having fairy sightings, the little green children from, you know, the Middle Ages, or, you know, the airships that people would see, you know. It all seems to somehow be tied together, right? Oak Mulgee is up the road from me in Macon, Georgia. I have this really cool image from Oak Mulgee with a motto that they use there. And it says, all things are connected. And that really is deeply important to me, not only because it's a sacred site that I fully, deeply, you know, care about and feel really special at, but I love the idea that all things are connected. So going back to the original question about extraterrestrials, maybe they're elves, maybe they're Pleiadians, maybe they're praying mantises, maybe they're grays, maybe they're all of the above, maybe it's Bigfoot, maybe it's what we perceive, or, you know, a personal definition that's internal, based on the stories that we share with each other.
I have a very weird, first of all, I don't know what an extraterrestrial is. I have ideas of what extraterrestrials or aliens, in quotes, might be, but they're just ideas. But I do have a working theory. I believe that they are not from a far off star system, another planet. I believe they've been here before we were here. I believe that the dinosaurs evolved into an intelligent race of beings, and that these intelligent dinosaurs, I would use the word reptilian, but thanks to David Icke, that's been beaten out of shape and I no longer even want to mention it. But these beings, I believe, created a very high-tech society, way beyond our own. I don't believe that the dinosaurs were wiped out by a comet or a meteor. I believe that they wiped themselves out in a massive nuclear, biological, chemical war. But like any such apocalypse, not all of them were killed. And I believe the survivors, some went into the air, and I believe they are behind the craft that are part of the phenomena. Some went underground into the cavern system, I believe they created vast bunkers. I don't believe in a hollow earth in the sense of Jules Verne's Journey to the Center of the Earth, but I do believe that there are vast areas where things live underground and that we sometimes encounter those things. And some went into the water and underwater and are the cause of a lot of the paranormal that we see there. But that these highly intelligent dinosaur beings are the aliens. Well, they're the controlling aliens. I also believe that they had such a mastery of genetics and of biology that a lot of what we see as aliens, like, for example, the Greys, are just temporary, like a biological robot. There's something that they can create to serve a task. But the Greys, I don't believe, run anything. I don't believe there's like a planet or a place where it's, you know, Greyistan and everybody's a Grey there. No, I think the Greys are just tools. They're like a walking, talking being that only lives temporarily because they can be created and they're essentially disposable. And I think that's a number of what we perceive as the aliens are temporarily existing, created beings that are created through higher technology by these ancient ones.
An alien to me is like an aerial entity. I love calling them aliens. I wish like xenophobes didn't use that word to talk about humans. I wish we could just like solely like have it be the cute like alien word that it is. And I try to just like keep it that way because it's fun. It's a cute little fun little word. I think that aliens are, you know, extraterrestrial beings, ultra terrestrial beings, interdimensional beings. I do think that they abduct us. I do think that they telepathically communicate with us. I have a vivid memory of being telepathically communicated with by aliens in work boots. and, you know, I think that it's a mixture of like aliens, you know, being able to talk with us like telepathically and like what they can communicate with us and what like meaning, like what our brain like allows us to like understand, because like every human has their own like level of understanding that they've kind of like reached and allowed themselves to have. And so obviously they can only like reach us as much as we're willing to like understand or whatever. But yeah, I believe.
As far as aliens coming down here to abduct us and do experiments, I used to think that was definitely a thing when I was younger, but as I get older, I don't know. I don't know if we're interesting enough that we're that cool that these beings would come down and just, you know, make babies with us. I think we're giving ourselves a little too much credit, and maybe we're not as interesting as we think. I think that they make for really good stories.
As far as a UFO cover-up or alien cover-up or the government knowing about these things for sure or whatever you want to call it, I think that yes and no, it is happening and it isn't happening. And what I mean by that is that the leaders, them, the government, the man, whatever it is you want to call them, they know things that we don't know. They have a certain set of facts that we as the public, we speculate on, but we don't actually have, like Roswell, for instance, right? I think that, of course, we are like, well, we think an alien ship crashed there and they recovered bodies in a craft and the government won't admit to it. Yeah, I think that's true. I think they did probably recover craft and maybe even bodies, but they won't admit to it. And the reason why is not because they know something about what's going on. It's because they don't. And the fact of the matter is that people, and I'm not going to dig into politics, but like we saw with the COVID-19 pandemic, people are more afraid of those folks going, we don't have answers than anything. And then they freak out and then all kinds of craziness, you know, ensues. So I think that, again, they have some facts, but because they don't really know what these things are, they don't want to even give those nuggets of truth. Like, hey, we have some craft. We don't really know how they work, but we have them. Or we've recovered bodies. We don't really know what they are, but they're here. I think that we put too much trust in these organizations. And I don't think that they know as much as some people may give them credit for. And that's just based off of, you know, not just my own hypothesis, my own theories based off of my research, but I have informants that I've spoken with that say exactly that, people that don't know each other. And that's exactly what they say. There's a lot that we don't know. So we just simply don't mess with it. And I 100% believe that.
I kind of wish that there was, because I think that'd be a lot cooler than what the government's actually up to. Sadly, I think, you know, the big government conspiracies are more around like having sex with young people and doing the gross drugs and, you know, oil and like big pharma. I think it's boring, not boring. I think it's like life-threatening sadness. Unfortunately, I wish they were more concerned about UFOs, but I don't think so. I mean, I do think that they don't want us to know, right? Didn't Obama even say that? Like, I do think that that's like a thing, but sadly, I think that they're more concerned with just like all the different ways they can make money and feed their obsessions and stay rich.
I do not subscribe to the opinion that there is a worldwide conspiracy. I think that no one knows how to handle these things, that they are so esoteric and so wrapped up in reality and consciousness and our inability to understand the world that our governments, all governments, can't do anything, right? Russia's, you know what I mean? Like, you get the ones that fall out of the sky, you look at them, it turns out to be weirder shit than you could have ever possibly fucking imagined, and then what, right? What if this thing just fell out of the sky and it, like, was completely against empirical scientific reality, right? As a government, what would you do? If something fell out of the sky and it was alchemically based, or based in fucking fairies, or whatever the thing is, based in something we can't even conceive, then what would you do? You know, you can't tell your citizens that, well, we can't do anything because we don't know what the hell we're dealing with. And I'm not even talking about like aliens. I'm saying they don't know what they're dealing with in terms of understanding consciousness, right? Think about that, that this might not even be something that's biological. What if it is a psychological phenomena? You know, just because something's psychologically based, or in terms of, I guess, what we would say in numinous or the psychosphere, that doesn't mean it isn't physical, right? That it doesn't have an element of interacting with the physical, right? Just because it's not biologically based. Think about being a government and trying to do that. You've got billions of dollars of weapons, and here's an other that can't be killed, can't be destroyed, but also doesn't technically exist in terms of what you think of as existence, but it can communicate with you. It's intelligent. It's actually a part of you, and it's always been a part of you. Like, that's what I think all of the governments around the world are dealing with privately. But what they're really trying to do is they're trying to figure out how to weaponize it. And that's where magic comes in. That's where you have the Wizards of Langley. That's where you have all of these guys that are mining this stuff, mining the psychosphere, trying to understand what this is, how to weaponize it, how to gain intelligence from intelligences that exist outside of humanity. Do you think that's what it is? That it is archetypally based, and that human consciousness is affecting how we perceive it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I believe in magic, man.
Because I believe in magic. Magic. Magic.
Make sure you join us on Patreon at patreon.com/beyondthepatio. You get a bonus episode featuring clips from all of our guests that you can't hear anywhere else. And on Saturday, we're watching Surface, my documentary that I've been working on for over 2 years. You got to join up to be there. Can't wait to see you.